This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres sends for the final time this season. It happens tonight on MSG and here on WGR Sports Radio 550 with Marty. I'm Brian. Hi, Marty. Your hair is looking lovely today. It's coming in very quickly.
You know what the thing is the shorter the hair is, the more significant it grows after a week. Like, you notice it. You're like, whoa, there's a lot of fill out there. Although it's coming in a little white and gray on the side, a little bit more than I thought. So thank you. It is winter. I almost came on with my hood up, my toque on top, my gloves on. It feels like winter out there.
It looked windy outside, so I didn't go out yet. I'll get there. I will get there.
I was out there, and it was a cold wind. Now, it's kind of beautiful. The sun's out, and it's a nice spring day. Mm. But it feels like a nice spring hockey weather type of day. It's beautiful out. You're going to drive to the rink if you're in Ottawa, and you're like, yeah, it's nice, and there's some sun. But when you get out of your car, you're like, oh, it's still hockey season. It's still a little cold.
So what's blowing through your mind today?
Well, what's blowing through my mind is because obviously the Sabres are playing the Ottawa Senators. And when you look at the standings, the Ottawa Senators are comfortably in a second wild card spot.
First
wild card spot. Oh, I'm making that mistake again.
You're copying my mistake from
exactly.
A week ago. Thank you.
So in the first wild card spot, and Montreal is not so comfortably into a second wild card spot, but still, I'm focusing on Ottawa, and I'm like, okay, at the start of the season, most people would have said Ottawa, Buffalo, Detroit, and to a lesser extent, Montreal, like those teams are teams that are primed to take a step forward, right? So I'm like, okay, on April 1st today, what are the numbers looking like? Like when you look at goals against, expected goals for, power play, penalty kill, shooting percentage, save percentage, what are the numbers looking like? And why is Ottawa, compared to the other three teams, has taken a big step forward, right? Can the numbers show something that would lead to a conclusion, right? And so I kind of did my pulling of the numbers. It's a four-team bracket this morning. It's the four nations of teams that were trying to make the playoffs. And what did the numbers look like?
And?
Well, so the Sabres are actually, as we all know, like really good in goals for. And you look, Ottawa is 20th in goals for, Montreal 15, Detroit 22nd. So Buffalo stands out when you look at goals for. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that, as we know, it's not so much how you score goals, it's how you defend and how less you give. You know, like, that may be my new thing. An analytics specialist, Marty Biron, is talking about, you know, I remember when we had Sam Ventura, and I love having Sam Ventura on a couple of years ago, and he said, well, the name of the game is to score goals. But how do you score goals? You got to get scoring chances. How do you get scoring chances? You break it down, right? That's the way you go. I almost feel like now when I look at numbers, I'm like, now the name of the game is not to score. The name of the game is to give up less. How do you give up less and kind of work your way that way? Because it almost feels like that is what my conclusion with all of this comes down to, is the better defensively you are, the better of a chance you get in. Doesn't matter if you're top five in scoring. Doesn't matter if you're top two in scoring. It doesn't matter if you're top 10 in scoring. It has no bearing into these four teams. Anyway, I'm not going to do all 32 into where you stand because it's all about defense.
Well, I mean, obviously we know where the Sabres rank goals against wise, even in this surge here where they've won four out of five, they're still averaging four goals against per game.
Yeah.
And I took a, you know, I was enjoying the moment when I dove into Boston's demise. Oh, they have three wins, the Bruins, in the last 19 games.
Mm-hmm.
But when I looked league-wide across that stretch of time, the Sabres have given up way more goals than the Bruins.
Yeah.
Even though the Sabres are basically 500 in that window of time, they are second highest in goals against over the last 20 games.
Yeah, so the Sabres overall are 29th in goals against at 3.56 right. this year. Ottawa's 2.84. Montreal and Detroit are both 26th and 22nd in goals against, which is why they're Montreal's on the, you know, on the edge there, and Detroit is out. Expected goals 5-on-5 is something I want to see. Like, how does the 5-on-5 play translate to where you are in the standings? The Sabres are 24th, Ottawa's 18th, Montreal's 19th, Detroit's 29th. Like, they're all in the same pocket, so you'd be okay. Well, what's the difference? The Sabres are 24th in expected goals 5-on-5 against. Montreal's 22nd, Detroit's 28th, Ottawa's 6th. Right?
Sixth so is a big difference.
That's the difference again. The difference between 6th and 20, 22nd, 24th is a big difference. And again, this all comes down to what was Ottawa's demise last season. They couldn't keep it out of their net, and their save percentage, their team save percentage, was the one of the worst. And I remember, was last, tied for 31st. And so now, well, what did they jump to? Team save percentage, they are 9th in the league. They're top 10. They're at 901. Well, you get a top 10 team save percentage, well, you're going to battle for, not just battle, you're going to be at a playoff spot, and you're going to have teams that are going to need to catch up to you. The Sabres have one of the best shooting percentage. They're 5th in the league. They outscore their opportunities. We know that because we know that Tage Thompson's going to hit 40 and Tuck hit 30 and Peterka. And, you know, you're looking at the expected goals and you look at the production, the Sabres are outproducing their expectations. But that's always been the case. 2 years ago, it was the case. But at the end of the day, for me, it's like Ottawa is different than Buffalo, Montreal, and Detroit because Ottawa defends better 5-on-5, and they have the save percentage to prove it at the end of the day.
Well, the save percentage obviously was expected in the acquisition of Ullmark, but how is it that they've reduced the chances against so much, and how does Buffalo do that moving forward to hopefully still complement the high-ranked offense?
Well, when I look at Ottawa, I think that, you know, a year older on the back end of Jake Sanderson, Thomas Chabot playing a much better role this year. And that was something that Chabot was always good. Like, he was always producing, but he wasn't really good in his own end. So Chabot has worked, and he's, you know, found a partner in Nick Jensen. There is that aspect of the defensive side of the game that has worked. But I also think that health for Ottawa is a big thing. When they, well, for the season, they had Josh Norris for most of the year. Now he's here, but he wasn't healthy last year all that often. Shane Pinto is the same thing. Like, their health in Ottawa has helped their defensive game, where they had most of their players, their key players, playing you know, at key time this season compared to last year.
Did you answer how Buffalo gets better at that?
Well, I also think that...
Not the help, the defending.
When you get a goalie like Linus Ullmark in, your team obviously is like, oh, hey, look at us. Like, we feel good. We feel better. And I know that there's no way to show the numbers on that.
Took a long time for him to do that, though. And this is the thing. Yeah. Like, Ottawa's 10-3-2 in the last 15. This is what has separated them and put them in wildcard one. And Ullmark had the hot stretch before and around Christmas, but then got hurt again. So
Levi Marjolainen was good for them when he came in.
Briefly, like, yeah. And obviously Forsberg, you know, has He's played the bulk of the game so far. We're expecting Ullmark tonight in the head-to-head series. But, it's just interesting how when you – like, did it take a long time for Travis Green to have an impact? And is that part of it here? Like, keep in mind, Jacob Chychrun just left Ottawa and just signed an 8-year extension in Washington, but didn't have the same impact in Ottawa. So it's never easy to just look at the surface and go, oh, well, this team's going to be better because they added this guy, right? That's not how it works.
In November 1st, Ottawa was 500, right? Like after a month of the season.
They were probably 500 at New Year's is my guess.
So I'm looking at like
at least
January 1st, when they turned the corner around in January 1st, they were 4 games over 500.
Okay.
But again, like their numbers, especially on the defensive side, weren't as great. Like they were giving up about 3 a game and they dropped to 284. So if you're giving up about 3 a game in the first half and you're at 284, that means you dropped to almost 2.5 in the second half. Like that's the big thing. Like where Ottawa took a step forward is they almost dropped a half a goal per game from the first half of the season to the second half of the year in their defensive side of the game.
Right. They were 500 basically January 9th at 19-18-3 and seemingly not going anywhere.
And seemingly like they're not going to make the playoffs. Boston, Columbus, Pittsburgh is ahead of them and Ottawa's not looking good.
Right. Well, tonight we're expecting Reimer again against the Senators as Buffalo looks for a season series sweep, having outscored Ottawa 12-3 in the 3 previous meetings. We are not expecting any of the injured to return as there were no significant update from the head coach on Norris or Greenway at this point in time. So what do you make of another Reimer start? He has won 4 in a row, all the wins in this 4 out of 5 stretch.
Yeah, so I think for James Reimer, the biggest thing now is, okay, you won the game, the last game and in Washington, it's an 8-5 game. How do you recover from that? Because there's many ways to recover from games after losses. Look, Anton Forsberg with Ottawa lost 1-0 to Pittsburgh. Sometimes getting over a 1-0 loss is pretty simple. I got to keep doing my job and doing what I do. It's not being selfish. It's just that's your job to stop pucks. And if you give up 1 goal in overtime, then, you know, you continue doing the same thing the next game. But when you gave up 5 in a game, but you end up winning, there's some adjustments that need to be made. Is it all on Reimer? No, it's on the Sabres as well. But to me, that is the interesting thing for Reimer. How does he bounce back after this showing, which – gave him a win, but saw him say, probably could have stopped a few more and made it a lot easier on my mates here. So, but he's been really good.
Do you actually overanalyze it when you're in that hot of a run?
I did. And maybe that's my problem, but if I gave up 5, you know, I talk about those 2 games, right, where I had the painted mask, the Sabres painted mask. I couldn't see anything, and we end up winning 6-4 and 5-4, something like that. And I remember thinking, I know I won 2 games, but how the heck have I given up 8 goals in 2 games? Mm-hmm. And what's going on here? Well, I can't see anything. Okay, well, get rid of that and start playing the right way. Like, you can't give up 4 goals a game and still win.
But correct me if – or. Forgive me for not knowing this accurately, but your unbeaten streak was what, 13 games?
13 in a row.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong. Did the Sabres at that point not score over 4 goals per game during that run?
I believe there was a ton of offense.
So there were probably a number of these games where it's like, that's okay. We're going to outscore though. I'm just surprised that you're always honest about this stuff. So I guess it's not surprising, but I wouldn't think that James Reimer at age 37 is too flustered by having a 5 goal against game and a win.
I don't know that flustered would be the way, but I think that for me, and a lot of time that's what I do. I kind of look at what would I do in that situation. Like, okay, so Sunday you beat Washington, Monday you get to the rink. I had to grab the goalie coach and said, hey, I want to look over some of the things. Like, it needs to be better. Like, I, you know, and maybe you felt 100%, and maybe you're like, I felt really good, but I want to see the adjustments. Or maybe you didn't feel good, and you're like, I didn't feel good. I got a win, lucky, gave up five. I need to be better the next game. Like, that's the approach right there. But I think James Reimer, being the veteran that he is, would probably see this as, okay, we won. I got away with one. Let's go. Let's move on to the next, and I need to be better.
18-6-4 against Ottawa. My guess is this, he's in a good place going into tonight, right?
Well, yeah, and a lot of that was the Toronto, like, you know.
Also the most recent game between these two.
Yeah.
The tightest one of them all.
Yeah, no, and you're right. Like, but again, 12 goals, 4 in 3 games for the Sabres. That's 4 averaging 4 game. 3 against. Okay, I'm not saying you're going to have a goals against of 1 for the season, and because that would be, you would win all the awards. If you give up a goal a game, that's it. But what's the difference? Why have you had success against Ottawa Senators? It's not because you you scored yourself out of problems. It's not because you outscored your problem. It's because you played tight defensively, you got good goaltending, and that has made the difference at the end.
I'm not sure I'm ever going to get to that place. You know what I mean? Like, maybe because we spent an entire year gloating about outscoring your problems, or almost gloating, because obviously it didn't get them to the playoffs, but we enjoyed the resurgence offensively from a team that had not scored significantly for a long period of time. And I get it. It would be terribly ignorant of me to ignore the defensive side. I'm still sitting here surprised that this is, like, where it's at defensively. That's all. Like, because there are enough pieces, especially the way December forward went for Luukkonen last year. So I guess I just can't figure out whether it's goaltending or whether it's team defense or both.
I think you get a sprinkle a little bit of both. I think that's what it comes down to. When I look at the numbers, I say, okay, well, if you're 24th in expected goals against, that's not good. Like, at 5-on-5, like, that means you give up too much. You give up, there's 23 teams that give up less than you. Right. Like, that's what it basically comes down to. We love that passive progressive commercial, right? Like, they play on word, the passive progressive, and don't be passive progressive. I think when we talk about analytics, a lot of it is always analytics to score, analytics to create. So I'm going to have the anti-analytics, but it's not about, I don't like the numbers. I'm just going to look at it the other way now, as I'm going to be defensive analytics that are going to be taking the lead moving forward.
So does this mean, like baseball, you're going to start measuring stance in the crease and how many inches from the goal line the goaltender stands to make a save?
If I have to. I know that, you know what I did the other
day? That's
what
they're doing with baseball in the batter's box, if you haven't seen it. It's you know, we've always known guys that dig in as far back as humanly possible, but it's nice to be able to contrast it with those who don't, right? Yeah. And see the approach and see the results. And
Duffer, I didn't tell you this the other night. I was looking online at goalie pictures. Like, you know, so you go on Getty Images and you pull goalie pictures, and I'm looking at net coverage. I'm looking at how big does the goalie...
Pre-1985, there was none.
I know, exactly. Pete Peters had zero net coverage. Andy Moog had zero net coverage. Oh. But I'm looking at net coverage. I'm looking at how does this goalie at 6'2", 180 pounds... how does he go in the net and has net coverage? And how does this goalie at 6'5", 220 has net coverage? That's what I was doing the other day. Basically, pictures after pictures after pictures, the same angle. And look, pictures are, could be, you know, misleading a little bit depending on the angle. And are you shot ready? Are you just standing? But I still want to see, because I think net coverage with a goaltender is huge. When you're set, and when you're in the position and you're covering most of the net, the puck is going to hit you. Look at James Reimer. The amount of time that he's been patient and boom, the puck hits him. Like, because it's about net coverage. I was out there digging in net coverage, comparing goalies around the league, because I think save percentage is a big one, but it has a, I really feel that save percentage and net coverage really work hand in hand.
Okay, so we're expecting Reimer versus Ullmark in the series finale tonight. Is there something then in this assessment of imagery in the crease that you, and we understand many goaltenders are different in how they play the game, but is there something that you see just in Luukkonen and Reimer from a stance and a coverage standpoint right now that for you, and this isn't a be all and all, this is me canvassing for your opinion, like something that you think of and that you notice in
there's definitely big differences. Like James is a little bit more back with the shoulders, a little bit more upright and not as wide. And I think that, think of Ed Belfour with the Chicago Blackhawks. Mm-hmm. What do you see?
Well, the one thing to keep in mind with Ed, he came through that era where at the start, he didn't have a lot in the upper body gear, right?
Yeah,
and then it evolved, so I'm curious to know.
Look at the lower body. I'm just saying, what do you see in Ed Belfour in the lower body, Chicago Blackhawks? We talk about width. Like, he was extremely wide. Like, he was wide in his stance.
I was going to say that, but then I was thinking the equipment wasn't allowing me to think that way, because even with his wider stance, I was still seeing an enlarged five hole.
Yeah, well, but there was a huge five hole because his stance was wide.
Yeah.
But then when you look at Ed Belfour with the Dallas Stars or even the Toronto Maple Leafs, whoop, it got really straight and really up. Like, he was like, number one, you're not as athletic. You're getting older, but you also understand the positioning now. And you're like, look, I got to have more net coverage, right? Because when I'm really low, my head is below the crossbar and I'm giving up all this room. So I got to make myself up a little bit. James Reimer is very much narrower, and that's the style that he's always been, but he's a little bit more back and a little bit more up and a little bit more patient on his feet, hands in the right position. When I look at Luukkonen this year, everything is on his toes, very wide, hands in tight, and shoulders forward. So everything is very small and going forward at the shooter instead of being back and patient. So I think that is a big part of where the difference is from Luukkonen this year compared to last year. The stance, the net coverage is not the same. Like, at the start of last season, there was a difference, and then it adjusted later in the year. And maybe that's the fact that he's played a lot this year, hasn't had a chance to adjust in practice because you're playing over and over and over again, get less practice time. But I see a very big difference between Reimer and Luukkonen, and I also see a big difference between Luukkonen this year and Luukkonen the second half last year, just in his body posture and his stance and how he when he's facing a shooter, like how he's putting himself out there.
Luukkonen 4-1 against Ottawa lifetime, including a shutout there this year, but he won't get the start tonight. Reimer expected to go again, significant, highest total wins. Thought I lost you. Highest total wins.
I dropped the cap of my bottle. So
I know.
And I spilled all over myself. I got water everywhere, Duffer. It's brutal.
Well, they do have to flood after the morning skate. So you were just getting in the moment. Reimer has 18 career wins against Ottawa. That is by far his most against any team. We have a lot to get to tonight in our pregame show. This is one of those ones where it's like, if people think I talk too much just to try to keep up with you, A, they're right. B, I'm probably wanting to say even more today because I've over-researched for some reason this matchup, this head-to-head history between these two. And now I'm sitting here not wanting to share all this information because I want to save it for tonight.
You want to save it for today, but you know that you do 100% of the work and you use about 10% of it usually in broadcast. So
what would you like to learn about? In Sabres sense, history on goaltending? Do you want games in Ottawa? Do you want the most?
Hey, my last ever Sabres game, my last game at home was the Ottawa Brawl, when we ended up playing the Sabres a few days later, the Sens a few days later in Ottawa. That was my last ever Sabres game. I didn't finish that one. I got pulled.
Do the research on your career in Ottawa. You were sub 500 as a Sabre in that building.
Well, Daniel Alfredsson always scored. It's his fault.
Well, two things can be true. Alfie could score and you could still win. But
well, they also had Martin Havlat and Danny Heatley and Marian Hossa, and those guys all scored.
Do you want to know probably the most surprising thing that I uncovered? Not that others wouldn't have known this. This was just a revelation to me. As it pertains to Dominik Hasek against
I was going
to
say, it was either a Miller or a Hasek stat that probably would be surprising. So Dominik Hasek as a Sabre in Ottawa, he was unbeaten.
He never had a shutout.
Oh, okay. Like, and you think of these bad Ottawa Senators team early when they came into the league.
That's how he made his career against the Senators as a Sabre. He ended up 9-4-4 all time in Ottawa with a 1.55 and a 948, but never had a shutout. And then 2-0 in the playoffs with a 1.29 and a 962, but never a shutout. It's and,
so the 2-0 with a 1-2-9, that means there had to have been a pretty good overtime game where he gave up two goals. So he gave up one and
double
two.
Overtime game two.
Oh yeah, that's right. Double yeah.
Part of the season sweep or the series sweep against Ottawa in 1999 en route to the Stanley Cup final.
That was Alexei Yashin, Michael Pekka. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what it was.
Yeah.
So
2-1, 3-2, 3-0, 4-3 were the scores in that series.
Because the year before that, 98, was Yashin not an Ottawa Senator that year? Is that year that he was the holdout? And then he
maybe,
came back for 1 year and then went Long Island?
I feel like, I mean, I moved to Ottawa in the 98, 99 season.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
So Yashin
was in the news forever. The National Arts Council donation scandal.
Oh,
and
Yashin did not play in the 99-2000 season. So that was after the Pekka.
I was there. Yes.
Yeah. So after the Pekka shut down Yashin in the 99 playoffs, he decided, I want out, held out a whole year. Mm. Ottawa kept his rights. And then he said, my contract is expired. I'm a free agent. And the NHL in Ottawa says, no, you did not fulfill your contract. You still owe us a year. So he returned for the 2000-2001 season.
Yep.
Had a really good year with 40 goals and 88 points. Mm-hmm. And then he was moved to the New York Islanders.
Where he became best friends with Michael Pekka eventually.
Never hit the same numbers. Never hit. He had 44 goals in 98-99, 40 in 2000-2001. Never hit those numbers again.
You want
but
the Sabres?
Still wore the turtleneck. And you know what? When I got to Long Island, played for the Islanders, I'm like, hey, do you guys have some dark blue turtlenecks? Like for? And they're like, we have a box that's labeled Alexei Yashin. So I had a bunch of Yashin's turtlenecks.
And you wore them, presumably?
Yeah. Yeah, I wore them. Like, I had extra ones or whatever. And this was, like, almost, you know, it was probably 2 or 3 years after that. It wasn't like they had been sitting there for 10 years, but maybe a couple of years. They had them in a box, in a bag, and I grabbed them.
See what meaningless research can lead to? I love that story. That's fantastic. But here's the other thing. You know what Buffalo's all-time playoff record in Ottawa is?
Well,
they played 10. Like, they played 10 games there.
It's probably 8-2.
8-2 is right. And if you subtract game one of 2006, the 7-6 game.
Overtime.
Buffalo allowed just 13 goals in the other nine games in Ottawa. That
incredible.
Is wild.
Now, I'm impressed that you asked me what is the playoff record of Buffalo and Ottawa. Mm-hmm. And what if I would have said 7-3-1? Would you have, 7-2-1? Would you have been like, Marty, it's playoffs. There's no, like, it's either you win or you lose. You don't get a loser point in the playoffs. But I was thinking at first, I'm like, oh, there's got to be some overtime. And then doesn't matter. It's a win or a loss.
As per usual, you were all over it. And we're looking forward to Buffalo, Ottawa tonight. And encouraging you to get online and vote for this year's Rick Martin Memorial Award. It's awarded to the player who best embodies on-ice excellence, resilience, and dedication to community. Visit sabres.com/RICO to vote today. We'll jump around the NHL from last night to tonight. More importantly, tonight, because there's some great matchups on a 10-game slate. We're back after this.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Why am I smiling more often these days when thinking about what's happening in the NHL, Marty?
Oh, because the St. Louis Blues are looking good.
Nope. Not that.
Not that. Oh, well, maybe it's because, so like one of our mentions on X right now is that, well, with a win from the Sabres tonight and a potential loss to the Bruins would be last in the Eastern Conference. So maybe that's why.
That's not it, as much as I would love to attach myself to that narrative. So
let me think.
What has become en vogue again lately?
En vogue?
Maybe it's just in my mind, but 50% of the games went this way last night.
Oh, the shootout?
Yes. Yes. I'm super excited.
Calgary, oh, by the way.
It's so crazy when the importance of this point, like even Colorado last night, who's essentially home and cool.
Yeah.
You can't replicate the chaos in the stands with every shooter going, like it was like, and then Calgary wins it incredibly after being down two. Like, man, oh man, the drama is just awesome. I love
it. So, yes. So when you get to a shootout and the points matter and it's fun and everybody's on their feet, I totally get that. Something happened in the Jersey-Minnesota game, though, that made me think, like, ugh, I don't love it. I get why. So there's 35 seconds left in the game, regulation. It's 2-2. New Jersey, we're up 2-1. They gave up a goal with about 2.5, 3 minutes left. What a play by Boldy. He got the puck in front, walked around Markstrom. And then with about 30 seconds left, Luke Hughes ends up with the puck behind the net, behind his New Jersey net. Matt Zuccarello from Minnesota is the one forward kind of in front of the net. And you kind of saw Zuccarello almost give him the stay there. Like, there's 30 seconds. We both are going to get a point. We both need the point. Stay there. Like, you know, it was the old, like, gentleman's agreement. Like, okay, we'll battle it out. Like, there's still 30 seconds.
Yeah.
New Jersey could break out, go on the rush, and score a goal. Maybe Minnesota could turn over, attack, score a goal. But they both kind of looked at each other and said, we'll take the point. And then in OT, Paul Cotter scored a goal. And our boy Ken Danico did not have his youthful excitement on the goal. And he first said, I think this is coming back. And they're like, what? Well, the play by Luke Hughes at the blue line may have been offside. And sure enough, it was offside, but not much. Mm-hmm. Good eyes on Kenny Danico. But I think he also could read the reaction from Luke Hughes when he stopped it and played the puck. So Paul Cotter scores. It gets taken out. And Cotter and Jesper Bratt had unbelievable shootout moves to seal it for the Devils. But you know what? Gentleman's agreement. It's like on the golf course. If you're good, like yours is good, mine is good, the putts, that's basically what they did there at the end of the game.
Well, Cotter had the shootout deciding goal yet again. He's got 3 shootout tallies this year, but how about the drama in Colorado? I mean,
2-0 with 10 minutes left, right? 11 minutes left.
And like the Grinders getting it done for Calgary, right?
And the Lamborghini and Plaska, right? That's what it was?
Klapka, yeah.
Klapka, yeah.
Yeah.
I put the P in the wrong like part of the name.
Yeah. Yeah, Klapka. I mean, it was, considering how St. Louis is the team that everybody's been chasing in the Western wildcard picture, and they've won 9 in a row, Calgary's somehow gone 5-1-1 in the last 7 just to stay in it. And I mean, imagine how demoralizing that is nightly to not, like, for all the drama, like Kadri scored consecutive overtime winners for them. They come back last night. Like, it was so joyful to watch their moment of equalization in the third period when they scored 2 goals in less than a minute. Like, it was amazing. And then they somehow navigated through overtime, which was high chance, and then they win in the shootout, but they're not gaining any ground. They're literally just staying afloat, and they still have all these games in hand, and
yeah.
I don't like their chances based on how St. Louis is going.
I don't love their chances, but again, my look into this race is I know Calgary's 5 points back of St. Louis and 6 points back of the Minnesota Wild, but I think that if you have a chance, it's to catch the Minnesota Wild. So you need to win your two games in hand, which would put you 2 points back of Minnesota. Here's the problem with Calgary. They do not have the tiebreaker when it comes to regulation wins. They are so far back, 4 back of St. Louis and 7 back of Minnesota. So they will have a tough time getting in on, you know, the tiebreaker. Well, they can't get in on the tiebreaker, so they're going to have to get a point more. Mm-hmm. That could be the difference there for Minnesota, St. Louis, and Calgary. Vancouver's out. Vancouver's done like dinner. They'd have to go 7-1 to hope to get to 95 points. I think 94, 95 is where it's going to be at. So that's going to be tough.
Well, tonight, Calgary takes on Utah, and St. Louis is in action against Detroit. The Blues have won 9 in a row. They have won 8 in a row at home. And you briefly mentioned it yesterday, how Binnington gets the attention here, but Hofer's been his equal of late. Yeah. I mean, they have outscored their opponents 39-13 in this 9-game winning streak. So think about that, like a goal and a half against per game. Binnington has 5 wins. Hofer has 4.
Yep.
This is not a one-man show. It's again, we almost, you know, for no good reason other than we love offer sheets. We've talked a lot about Holloway and Broberg, but Robert Thomas has a chance to do something tonight that's never been done in the Blues history, and that is make it 5 straight games with multiple assists in a game. Like, we cannot overlook, like, how consistent their top players have been.
Yeah.
So,
and when the offense is going, then it adds to, you know, those type of stats where Robert Thomas has been able to produce at, you know, the point per game like that he's at right now and more, like in the last 4 games with multiple assists.
Well, he's actually one of the leading scorers in the league over their current win streak. So
yeah. Which is what it is. You need your big guys to produce. But again, going back to the start of the show, the St. Louis Blues don't give up anything. Both goalies are playing well. They don't give up anything. So, yeah, the offense is great. But if you had a tough time defending, you would have lost 3 or 4 of those games, maybe 4-3 or 3-2. Like, you know, you may not get that extra goal because you're giving it up. And that's the difference there. Also, last night, so I was asked the other day, what is the most disappointing team in the NHL? Are the Vancouver Canucks the most disappointing team in the NHL? And I answered, no. The Canucks have been disappointing this year. And it was all the soap opera drama, the JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, whatnot. But the Nashville Predators are by far the most disappointing team this year after the summer that they had and everything. Well, they lost 2-1 to the Flyers last night. The Flyers are 3-0 with new coach Bradshaw. And they've looked really good in the way that they've played. They've scored a lot. Beat Montreal 6-4, beat the Sabres 7-4. But now they turn it around and win a 2-1 game where they played really well. So the coach bump in Philadelphia has been real. It's not a Sabres live bump, but it is a coach bump over there.
Yeah, but you led into it by talking about Nashville. So let's not give credit where it may be due. Let's take credit away because Nashville, like, I don't know if I've seen a more passionless Steven Stamkos interview. Not even passionless, like so sad. Just
that's because he got beaten up. Did you see the play? He tried to push the goalie into the net. He tried to push Fedotov, who's 6'7" or 6'8" or whatever. He tried to dig, and then he had 4 Flyers on top of him, feeding them right knuckle sandwich. And so that's probably why Stamkos was sad. He didn't score, and he got his lunch like stolen from him.
He also had a really bizarre moment where the shot came in and he was like in the middle, I think, of getting high-sticked and the puck ricocheted off the crossbar and hit him up high and he falls forward. And I'm like, it cannot get any worse for this.
Steven Stamkos, sad emoji. That's what you're getting in your text group right now.
I was going to, now that you brought it up, we're a ways away from knowing what the answer is going to be on this, but what are they going to do in Nashville? Like, what do you think is going to happen in the offseason?
Well, there's not a lot that can happen in the offseason when you look at their... I mean, they can do some work.
Take a page out of Vegas's book. You can change anything dramatically if you want to.
But I almost feel like the number one thing Nashville has to look at is coaching. So that's one. And maybe that's what they have to go, because they can say, okay, we have Philip Forsberg. We have Stamkos, Marcia, so O'Reilly on defense. We have Yossi. And that we have Yossi Soros. Like, we have the pieces. So is it when it comes down, okay, you put me on a quest now. I'm going to go dig in the numbers with Nashville and compare them to what they were, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, like when...
They can't score. They haven't scored all year. That's the problem. So...
They're not defending well either. They haven't... Like, look, if you can't score... Then, you know, lately here, you know, Soros has played better.
Right.
Last night was Justus Annunen. He was good. Ooh. But earlier in the year, they couldn't stop anything. Teams were rolling them over.
I know. But the bigger story at that point was Stamkos not scoring, Marchessault not scoring. Their additions are not paying off. So, yeah, it was tough to watch. Let's put it that way. Normally, they're a fun team, and fun has forgotten them this year. We have lots to get to tonight.
Just so quickly, Nashville is 25th in expected goals against at 5-on-5, and they are, it's loading here.
In real goals, they're like 30th.
Yeah, they're 22nd in expected goals for 5-on-5. So 22nd for 25th against, that's not really good.
No, it's not. But again, in real numbers here, like, this has been the surprising part about Calgary staying in the mix, because they're arguably the worst. They were the worst offensive team. It is now Nashville, 32nd in goals for, 2.5 per game, even trailing San Jose and Calgary. So,
yeah, that's not good. They've not really been good at all in that department. And wow, I just saw a stat, Duffer. According to Sports Logic, at 5-on-5, the Flyers are of the worst, basically, goals against expectation, like their goaltending and defensively. 21.7 more goals than expected given up at 5-on-5. The next team has given up 8 more than expectation. So there's a 13 goal gap between Pittsburgh, who's 31st, and the Flyers, who are 32nd.
You know what
I'm
saying?
That's why those two teams are two of the worst teams in the league.
Long may it last. That's all I have to say. Yeah, we're back after this on Sabres Live.
Long may it last.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sens and Sabres tonight, and Buffalo 6-3 in the last 9. The Senators are 10-3-2 in their last 15, all part of a 10-game slate. Marty, how many in the somebody has to win bowl between Washington and Boston? Capitals have lost 3 in a row. Bruins have lost 8 in a row. How many for Ovechkin tonight against the Bees?
I'm going to say a modest 2 for Ovechkin tonight. Look, Boston, they don't score a lot. They actually defended okay, but I think Ovi is going to jump on that opportunity to score and score often. And so he's in Boston tonight. I don't see him breaking the record tonight, but you look at the Washington Capitals schedule. So they have Boston, Carolina tomorrow, home, Islanders. He can beat it in Columbus. So there's a bunch of buildings that are happy that Ovi's coming in right now because of the buzz. So I think this gets done either one of those last two games of the season. New York Islanders on Tuesday in Long Island, or on Thursday in Pittsburgh. Those are the two games. If I wanted to get a ticket to see Ovechkin beat Wayne Gretzky's record, I would probably get tickets to those two games.
Well, you'd probably default to the Island, because you likely still get free tickets based on your alumni status. So,
well, I can probably walk in with my
your media pass. Act so like you've been here before. Can Montreal get the season series sweep of the Panthers? They've won the first three.
It's interesting, right? Because I feel like this Montreal team matches well against Florida. Either they got great goaltending the first time when Jakub Dobesh played well. Mm-hmm. They really got key moments of the game scoring with Suzuki and Hudson had a fantastic game last one. But this one's interesting because how do you respond to the whole Nikola shooting the puck at the end of the game? Mm-hmm. Like, I think this is going to be like an intense battle tonight. Like, look, they got in a scrum and he got his $5,000 fine, and they're not going to go and fight him, but I think this is going to be intense at the Bell Center tonight.
Columbus is home to Nashville. The Islanders have lost five in a row. They host Tampa. Those are teams that are directly involved in the chase for a wild card spot in the East. We'll see you tonight at 6:30, Sabres and Sens.